Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game.
It may be the nighttime,
but the sports talk doesn't stop.
Sports talk radio that's live, local,
and not for the faint of heart.
Oh, you didn't know?
Sometimes angry.
Loud noises!
Telling it like it is.
You insulted him a little bit. You got a little out of order yourself.
And pretty much always right.
Don't ever argue with the big dog. Big dog is always right.
Text or call 404-741-0929 and be part of the show.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Kia Studios, it's time for the John Chuckery Show. Serving you up sports on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And welcome into Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Yes, it is time for the John Chuckery Show. Hanging out with you on this Tuesday evening in the Kia Studios. I'm going to be with you for the full three. We ask you to download the Odyssey app. You're not in the car as much. You want to listen in. Put the Odyssey app on one of your devices today. Take your smartphone. You can use your Alexa speakers. You can use your tablet, your Xerox, your boombox, your portable TV. Whatever your device is, just download it on something to be able to catch us when you're on the go. Social media is at 929 The Game on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And as always, best way to be a part of the show is to follow us on our personal Twitter pages. I am at JMCH316, and that is your water cooler talking points 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. On the other side of the glass, boosting the show, as always, Day-Day is in the house at the D. Lewis for real. Well, busy show tonight. Got a lot to get into. Let's start with the Atlanta Braves as they continue to just roll right along. They pounded on the New York Yuckies last night. Now they sit 11.5 games ahead of the Philadelphia Phillies in first place, 14 games over the Fishnets, and the old 22.5 over the New York Mets. And, you know, again, this has been a laugher of a division, and obviously it's been nothing but pure offensive showmanship for the Atlanta Braves. They put up 11 runs last night. They're just pounding the daylights out of the baseball. It feels like it's somebody new every night. I mean, it's all the same cast of characters, but it just seems like they just rotate from who's having a big night with the long ball from one guy to the other. A couple of nights it'll be Olsen, then all of a sudden Riley's got a couple of nights, Sean Murphy, then Ronnie, even Arcia, Michael Harris, Ozuna, Rosario, right? I mean, it's just a plethora of just big-time bash baseball. Now, tonight, we get to see what Bryce Elder can do. And look, when I say that it's not been, you know, smooth sailing for Bryce Elder over this last month or so here, his last seven starts, which was all of July and two starts in August. So July and August, he has made seven starts. The Braves are 3-4 in those games. He himself is 2-3. He's pitched 35 innings in that seven starts, so he's only averaging the five innings. He's given up 41 hits and 27 earned runs. That's a 6.94 ERA. The frightening part, 35 innings. He's only got 18 strikeouts in that 35 innings, and he's got 14 walks. He's basically a 1-1 strikeout to walk pitcher. That's not a good sign. And by the way, his strikeout numbers have gone down quite a bit over the course of this year. And his strikeout per nine, you know, is down as well. The league in his last seven starts is hitting .289 against him with a .350 on base, .479 slugging. That's an .829 OPS. So, again, it's been rough going for Elder, really for once you got past March, April, May. When it came June, July, August, it's been a rough go. And we've talked about this and we've given you the numbers. I mean, it's definitely been a rough go. Now, look, again, he's by and large a rookie pitcher, right? He only pitched 54 innings last year. So, I mean, he doesn't have a whole lot of starts and things like that. But I will say that if he's not careful, he's going to work himself out of a start in the playoffs. Because you're going to have Freed, Morton, and Strider. That you know for sure. And at some point, if Soroka comes up, maybe Soroka could grab one of the other playoff spots. You're not going to probably have five starters the way the schedule's going to work. And the Braves are going to have, you know, they're going to have some rest because they're going to end up with the best record in the National League. They're going to rest going into their series, which I think right now is the Giants and Philadelphia would meet up in the, whatever they call it, wild card, or is that what it is? I guess it's the wild card round or whatever like that. So, again, the Braves will have, you know, home field advantage in all this, but, you know, he's maybe working himself out of a start. Now, obviously, a lot of things can change. One is he can get hot. Two is we can have guys beat up, banged up. We saw last year that really cost the Braves. Max Fried throwing up in a bucket and, you know, Spencer Strider coming back from that oblique injury and just wasn't the same guy. I mean, a lot of things can change because, again, there's almost – I guess maybe not quite a third of a season, but, you know, it's close to a third of a season. And, you know, again, a lot can change in that amount of time. But Elder, you know, he's not pitched all that well, and he needs himself a good start. You know, the last couple of times that he's had a quality start, you know, he had a couple of good starts back-to-back at the end of July. You know, where he went 6 innings, 2 runs, 7 innings with 1 run against the Brewers, and then he followed that up with 5 earned runs and 4 1/3 inning against the Cubs, and then against the Pirates, 5 innings, 5 earned runs. And like I said, I mean, just too many walks. The home run ball over the last, this July-August stretch in these 7 games, he's given up 6 home runs in that 7-game stretch. And that's been kind of a theme, it seems like, for pitchers for the Braves this year. But again, it's a home run league, right? I mean, we're seeing the Braves offense just put up ridiculous numbers. So Bryce Elder, we got to get him back to, you know, what he was right at the end of July. Because the first part of July, he had a really good start against the Indians. I call them the Indians, sorry. I'm not going to call them the freaking name that they use now. 6 2/3, 2 earned runs. But then it was 3 1/3 with 7 earned runs, 2 2/3 with 5 earned runs. He gave up 7, but only 5 of them were earned. And then the 6 innings and 2 runs, you know, at the end of the month and 7-1. So, again, it's been very Jekyll and Hyde here. But the overall numbers for July and August are a 6.94 ERA. In fact, he started the month of July with an ERA of 2.45. Right now, he sits with an ERA of 3.64. So it's been, you know, almost a run and a quarter, you know, over the last month and a couple of starts. Remember, in the first 11 starts, he had a 1.93 ERA. His ERA was under 2. Now it's, you know, more than double that. Well, almost double that at 3.64. So, again, need Strider to get back on track. The offense to continue to do what they do, right? I mean, that's, you know, again, it feels like it doesn't matter if the Braves win or lose. They're going to have a big offensive outing. I mean, that's just – that doesn't. It doesn't feel like anybody really shuts the Braves down, right? I mean, it doesn't feel like that they get – just arbitrarily shut down by just about anybody. Oh, yeah, by the way, we talk about the 7, 8, 9 hitters in that game last night. 7 for 14, 5 runs scored, 8 RBI. Let me repeat that. 7, 8, 9. 7 for 14, 4 runs scored, 8 RBI. All three guys in 7, 8, 9 had a run scored. All three guys had at least 1 RBI. All three guys had at least a hit. Rosario had 3 hits, 3 runs, and 4 RBI. He had the home run. Lopez, a run with 3 hits and 3 RBI. And Arcia had a run and RBI in it as well. I'm telling you, when their 7, 8, 9 hitters got it cranked up and going, You're not beating the Braves. And that lineup just keeps chugga-chugga-chugga, keeps turning over. They just keep turning that lineup over. They keep that train a-rolling, and they keep turning it over. And that's what leads to the Ronnies and the Rileys and the Albies and everybody else. Now, a couple of things. Speaking of Ozzie Albies, he has ended up on the IL now with that hamstring injury. So, again, I'm letting him rest for as long as he needs. The worst thing you can do is rush a hamstring back. And with this division lead and everything else around it, I know he wants to play, and I know he wants to put up the numbers, but I'm more worried about when we get in the postseason. Take as long as you need to. Hamstrings are one of those things that if you think, Day-Day, if you think that your hamstring is ready to go, give it another week.
Yeah, that's not – I had a hamstring injury in track in high school. You can't rush that.
Mm-mm.
You cannot rush that.
High ankle sprains and hamstrings. If you think you're 100% ready to go, wait another week. That's true. I mean, it's just you need to give it even more time than what you think. Because your mind can play tricks on you.
Yeah, because it's going to feel fine way sooner than it actually is.
Exactly. And again, they've got Nicky Lopez. Now, they brought Vaughn Grissom up. And I'll give Vaughn Grissom all the credit in the world. He has been a trooper. He's hit 327.
Yeah, he's been doing his thing down there. Yeah.
He's had 50 RBI. He's got a good bit of stolen bases, scoring runs, playing well. And he's hit 327 with, I think, a 400 on-base percentage. He's done his job down there.
Yeah, he's doing what he should have done. Just ride it out down there,
yep.
Perform.
But I mean, he's been a pro about it. I mean, he could have just had a season where it was just a throwaway season and he'd be all frustrated, but he's showing you that he has played really well. So Vaughn Grissom is back up here. Obviously Nicky Lopez has been a phenom. They're not missing a beat. They're just not missing a beat. And they have so many guys on their roster, just so much depth on their roster. So, Ozzy to IL, don't rush it back. I'll give him even a week after he thinks he's ready to go because this team is just rolling right along. We'll keep you updated all night long about what happens with the Atlanta Braves. Falcons continue to prep for the Bungles as I know Mike and Freaky were talking about this. Look, I think it's going to be a huge crowd. This is going to be your only chance to see the Falcons starters. This will be your one only chance to see the Falcons starters before game number one of the regular season, right? They're not going to play in week three, I promise you. Like, there's no reason whatsoever to think that they're going to have one snap, even Desmond Ridder or whatever. No reason to think that they're going to have any snaps in game three of the preseason. I think you're going to treat it exactly the same way that they treated game one. You'll see the starters maybe for a quarter, maybe for a half, maybe not all of the starters, but I think you'll see a pretty good dose of the starters, coming up on Friday. And obviously we'll have all the action right here on the home of the Falcons, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Pre-game will be at 5:30, 7:30 kick. Chris Goforth and Mike Johnson will have the pregame. And the post game as well. And then Wes and Dave will have the kick starting at 7:30. By the way, we've got high school football coming up here from the Corky Kell Classic. Games tomorrow, game Thursday, no game on Friday because we're not covering the game because of Falcons football. But then we've got four games coming up on Saturday starting at 9:55 in the morning. And I think Garrett's hosting all the pregame stuff, right? And are you going to be involved in one of the games?
I'll be sideline reporting for the first two games.
I mean, we have got a cavalcade of all-stars that is right. You're going to be part of it. The governor, Sam Crenshaw, is going to be part of it. Harper LaBelle is going to be part of it. Chris Goforth will be part of this.
Yep.
I believe Eric Slaughter is going to be part of it.
Yeah, and I think even tomorrow Mike Conti is going to be on the call for one of them.
This is what I heard from Garrett. Jason Longshore and Mike Conti.
Yeah, I think they're doing the tomorrow
Mike,
night game.
Mike Conti, am I invited? Am I going to be calling a game? I don't know. I mean, maybe I can bring Hugh back. But anyway, Jason Longshore and Mike Conti are going to have the call.
So that's look. It's going to be again a cavalcade of stars. Sam, the governor, Sam Crenshaw, was asking me. He's like, "Do you want to be part of that?" I was like, "No, I'm good. Yeah, nah, I'm good. Yeah, no, thanks. I don't do all that play-by-play or color analyst or sidelines. I don't do all that stuff. Yeah, I sit behind a microphone here and I just blow hard into a microphone for well, it used to be 4 hours. Now it's three. So
there you go.
I'm saving my voice. So. All right, here's what we got, 404-726-0929. And I'm hoping we can have a discussion with this and get your calls, 404-726-0929. Take away Ronnie. Take Ronnie out of the mix. Who do you think finishes for the MVP award in the National League, Freddie Freeman or Matt Olson? Take Ronnie out of it. I know Ronnie's going to win it. Freddie or Olson? Who you got? 404-726-0929. We'll give you our thoughts. Chuck Reed hanging out in the Kia Studios. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the Odyssey.com app.
Ready to do this?
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, back at it. Chuck Reed Show. Boys to Men, BBC. No, what is it? What is it?
Boys to Men, ABC, BBD.
ABC, BBD, yeah. I'm thinking about how Jim Cornette calls it the BBC on All Elite Wrestling. So, and I know that's got a different meaning altogether, but anyway. 404-726-0929. That is our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. It's also our phone line. We're asking you the question, take Ronnie out of the mix, okay? Who would finish higher in the MVP voting, Freddie Freeman or Matt Olson? 404-726-0929. You know, it's funny because you have two guys that obviously have succeeded one another as the Braves first baseman. And look, both guys are having monster years. And part of it is probably where they hit in their lineup, right? I think Freddie hits a lot of number two in their lineup. We saw Olson hit that, but since Olson has moved down a little bit in the order to that 3-4 spot, he's been raking. I mean, his numbers are outstanding. Just for craps and giggles, okay? Just kind of looking at different things, okay? So again, we're taking Ronnie out of this. Offensive wins above replacement. Freddie's second in the National League at 5.9. Olson is fourth at 4.8. Freddie Freeman wins above replacement for all players, 5.3. That's fourth in the National League. Fourth in the National League. Olson is fifth in the National League at 5.2. When you look at batting average, Freddie is second in the league in hitting. Freddie's also second in the league in on-base percentage. Matt Olson leads the National League in slugging percentage at .621. Freeman is second at .588. When you look at OPS, right, that's on-base plus slugging. Olson is number one in the league at 1.007. Freddie is second at 1.005. So you got to go to 1/1000ths of a point, difference in all of that. Freddie has the second most runs scored behind Ronnie at 101. Olson is tied for third with 94. Freddie's third in hits. Matt Olson is first in total bases at 277. Freddie is second at 274. Freddie leads the league in doubles with 43. Olson leads the league in home runs by a big margin with 43.
He also leads the league in RBI with 107. Freeman is fourth in RBI with 83. Ozzie, believe it or not, is second in the league. So, again, when you look at all of the different numbers, you know, take, for instance, runs created, okay? That's runs scored plus RBI minus home runs, okay? That's your runs created, Day-Day, okay? Freeman is second in the National League with 120 runs created. Olson is third with 110 runs created. Freddie has 68 extra base hits. That leads the league. Olson is second with 66 extra base hits. So there are so many different similarities to all of this. And, you know, look, I'm probably biased. I mean, I'll probably be a little bit of biasness to it. But I give probably the award to Olson because those power numbers are going to be overwhelming. Like they're going to have overwhelming power numbers, whatever it's going to be, whether it's 50, 60 home runs, whatever it's going to be. Like his numbers are going to be staggering from a power production standpoint. And I think that's the biggest edge that I give Matt Olson. Now, obviously, Freddie having, like I said, you look at all of the wins above replacement numbers and all this kind of stuff, they're right neck and neck with each other. But I think the power numbers would win out. Day-Day, I'll ask you, what do you think? If you've got Ronnie out of the mix, who's next, Freddie or Olson?
I honestly, to your point, being a homer, I'm going to vote for Olson. But, you know, the overall, like kind of like what Mike was saying when you guys were talking about it during the crosstalk, I don't know that the writers would lean that way. I think they would give it to Freddie. And then obviously, I don't know, you didn't get into too many defensive stats, but, you know.
But
that's probably going to play a role in it, too.
Yeah, I mean, look, neither one of these guys is in the top 10 as far as defensive war rating goes. Believe it or not, Dansby Swanson is fourth. So for all the talk about, well, he's not playing a good defense. Well, he's fourth in the National League in defensive wins above replacement at 1.8. McMahon for Colorado is first at 2.0. But again, I think the eye test tells you a little bit. Olson has, set a career high in errors over the last 2 years. He's done it for 2 years now that he's done that. And, again, I don't know how many errors Freddie Freeman has, but, last year I didn't think Matt Olson played very good defense. I really didn't.
Right.
I mean, his errors were up. He was not making as many double plays and things. I mean, just there were lots of just things when you saw him play at first base. I didn't think he had that good of a year last year defensively.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much that's going to factor in. When you've got two guys at this level of production, again, when you've got the guy who's second in the league in batting average and the guy who leads the league in home runs and RBI, like their numbers are overwhelming.
Yeah.
those all of those offensive metrics are too overwhelming that, again, it would be one thing if, it was Will Clark versus Jose Canseco playing defense at first base, right? If one guy was Don Mattingly and the other guy was Rob Deere, that may factor into it, but their numbers are so overwhelming that I don't think that the difference in defense isn't enough to, I think, sway voters one way or another. Now, to your point, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think that Freddie Freeman's going to – I think he's going to truthfully finish second. I think this is how the MVP race is going to go.
Yeah.
Ronnie's going to win.
Yep.
Freddie's going to finish second.
Yep, and Olson
and then,
three.
Well, I'll tell you the other guy is Mookie Betts is having a monster year.
Yeah, Mookie, yeah, that's true.
If you look at some of the metrics, Mookie Betts is having a massive year.
Yeah, he is.
And I think that Mookie – I think because of the Dodger franchise – I think Mookie and Olson are going to be 3-4. They could Olson could finish third or he could finish fourth. But I think Ronnie and Freddie, they will finish 1-2
yeah.
in the MVP voting. And I think when you again, it's not like Freeman's not hitting home runs. He's got 23 homers. Again, he's fourth in the league in RBI. He's already over 100 runs. So he's going to have 100 runs and 100 RBIs and probably hit 30 homers when all is said and done. So it's not like he's, you know, and by the way, he's hitting .337. It's not like he's got chicken feed numbers, okay? But compared to Olsen's power and RBI numbers, they're kind of dwarfed. I mean, that's why I give it to Olsen. In a league where, in a game in modern-day baseball where some of the other metrics like batting average and things like that maybe don't weigh as heavily, that's why I give it, you know, in modern-day baseball. But again, both of them are having monster years. Like, yeah. They both guys, if you told me that one guy was going to start for your team going into the playoff, I wouldn't have a problem with either guy starting for my franchise.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you something, because I was thinking about this the other day. Does it seem like the national media, though, does not seem to be talking about Olsen as
because
much?
Because Ronnie is such the clear-cut MVP.
Right.
I think a lot of the focus has been on him. I think a lot of – look, we've talked about this with Bob Nightingale and John Heyman, that for a lot of the season – Sean Murphy was the guy that was getting a lot of MVP consideration. He was the guy who was getting a lot of love from the MVP voters, you know, or, you know, again, we talked about Bob Nightingale we had on, you know, for pretty much this whole season. You know, he talked about, you know, Murphy in the first part of the year was probably a top four or five MVP candidate. John Heyman, who we've had on the show, he's talked about Sean Murphy's contribution. And Murphy's a guy that is such an outstanding defensive player,
right?
That at that position, that weighs in very heavily. You know, he's called good games. He's a great defensive player. And obviously, he's having his best year offensively of his career. But I think Olsen's numbers are now starting to overwhelm everybody. You know, his numbers with the homers and the RBI and, you know, all of that is starting to take over now from even Sean Murphy's brilliance behind home plate.
Right.
So, again, I think for a lot of the season, you know, we've been laser-focused that Ronnie has been the MVP of the league and probably since about a third of the way through the season. He's shown you that he's the best player in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that all that focus has been on there, but people are starting to talk a lot about Matt Olsen now, right? And now it's starting to be like, okay, well, somebody's got to drive in Ronnie and Ozzie and everybody at the top of the order. Oh, that's Olsen? Oh, okay. Oh, and he leads the league in RBI? Oh, and he leads the league in – and again, once you start passing Ohtani, you know, when you have to be talked about with Ohtani, then that starts a whole nother conversation.
Right.
Oh, well, he's got as many homers or he's got one more homer than Ohtani. That's a big deal. I mean, because, again – everybody looks at Ohtani as the best player in the American League, and Ohtani's going to run away with the MVP award.
Yeah, hands down.
You know, so, I mean, he's going to run away with the MVP award, but when you look and say, okay, well, if he's the MVP, you know, Matt Olsen should be somewhere in that mix because he's got more homers than Ohtani. And by the way, he's driving in runs and has a high on-base percentage and all that stuff. So, but again, I think that when you start talking about the voter split, that's one thing, but I just think people look at that somebody has to be rewarded from the Dodgers. Somebody has to finish high up in the voting for the Dodgers because they haven't – it's not like that they've had a bad year. They've got 71 wins or whatever at this point. And I think more than Ronnie and Olsen splitting the vote, it's going to be Freeman and Betts that split the vote amongst the Dodgers because you can make a case that both those guys have had monster outstanding seasons. Betts has had a huge year. That's a guy that I wanted to trade for and pick up, and he helped him win a World Series. But anyway, enough about all of that. All right, Daniel Flick going to join us here coming up. We'll talk some Falcons foosball with him as we get ready for Friday night. Falcons and Bungles coming up from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Chuck Green, the Kia Studios, Sports Radio 910 The Game, the Odyssey.com app.
Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, back at a Chuckery Show, hanging out in the Kia Studios on this Tuesday night with you. 404-726-0929, that is our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. A couple of hours, we will get to rank them. Don't forget, we do it at 940 now, so hit us up with your list. I did have some people that were tweeting me already yesterday, so hit us up at the text line or on my Twitter page, at JMSage316. He's at the D. Lewis for real. Falcons get ready for football coming up on Friday, preseason game number 2. We certainly will see the starters, and they'll take on the Cincinnati Bengals. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer. Let's talk to our buddy Daniel Flick. He is a Falcons writer for Falcons Report, a part of Fan Nation, and he's part of the SI Network as well. He's on Twitter at by Daniel Flick. And Daniel, appreciate a few minutes as always as we get ready for preseason game number 2 coming up here.
Absolutely, man. Happy to hop on with you as always, and excited about, you know, watching Atlanta in action at home this year for the first time on Friday night.
You know, I did think that it was a really good first step. I mean, look, I've explained this to people. You know, would you rather have your backups and third string guys get run over and, you know, play, you know, poorly? Or would you rather have your guys that, you know, and there are plenty of guys that they're going to rely on, you know, to be pieces, the D. Alfords and, you know, Arnold Ebiketie and guys like that. I mean, look, there's plenty of expectation for all those guys. But, again, I thought it was a good first step all the way around for this team.
Yeah, and, you know, the one thing that a lot of the guys in there have talked about in the last week is that that win, even with the starters not out there, you could see an identity forming. And that I think, you know, one of the things that the Falcons have kind of lacked the last several years, like a consummate team identity. And I think this year, again, even though it's not the starters, you can see a certain type of player, a certain type of mindset, for sure a high level of urgency is honestly the word I would use for it. But it was a very, for me, encouraging performance, because I feel like, you know, you mentioned Ebiketie, Alford, you know, very, very clearly that, you know, very, in my eyes, two pretty big winners from, you know, the opener. So I think, you know, playing them in that game, you were hoping that they'd play the way that they did. And so that was obviously encouraging. But even beyond them, there were so many guys in that win that are fighting for roster spots, you know, that ended up playing at a pretty high level. And you could just feel, you know, especially with Ryan Nielsen's unit there, you could just really feel a level of aggression. And again, as you're going to see the talent ramp up on Friday night when they play the starters, I think you're kind of looking to see that same level of overall aggression. Again, I love the word urgency. I think that's really important for this year's team. And I think that's, you know, the way that they've built the team, it's not just a player-by-player deal. It's a mindset that the team has taken on. So even beyond the actual on-field, you know, I would call it a very impressive showing on Friday night of last week. I think it was more a larger picture takeaway that everybody's kind of talked about. Obviously, you know, we've heard all offseason about how strong they feel the culture is there. But I think you really start to gain a greater appreciation for that when you see how deep the roster is with guys who fit that culture. And so I think that was my main takeaway from last Friday night in Miami, and I'm very excited to kind of watch that play out this Friday night as well.
Well, and Daniel, I will say that I have consistently said on this radio show, my podcast, and everywhere I have a platform, that the best acquisition that the Falcons made wasn't a player, wasn't trading for somebody, wasn't Ryan Nielsen. I think the best acquisition they made was bringing Jerry Gray in, who is a longstanding, really good defensive coach. Obviously, you know, if you listen to people like Jair Alexander, he had a big influence on his career. He was there in 2010 when the Seahawks had a couple of rookies named Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas. Those guys turned out pretty well. But the thing is that I think you saw his fingertips all over that secondary. And I know he's not their secondary coach per se, but he's been brought in to do a lot of different things. But the idea of, hey, passes being knocked down, multiple interceptions from this team. There was an aggression out of the secondary that we haven't seen for years, and that's why I'm super excited that when Okuda finally does get healthy and we can see A.J. Terrell and Jesse Bates and Richie Grant and Jalen Hawkins, when we see the guys that are really going to play, and again, D. Alford as well, I think Jerry Gray has already had his fingers all over the pulse of this defense and what this secondary is looking like.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, you mentioned how often they got their hands on the ball in Miami. That's a trend that's been happening all training camp, frankly. You know, I mean, that is a trait that secondary has taken on. And, again, the Falcons the last several years have not been very good at forcing turnovers, whether that's a pass rush problem, a secondary problem. You know, obviously it's an age-old argument, but no matter how you shape it, they haven't forced turnovers. And I think this year, obviously, that's a big step that they're trying to make. And I think, you know, the easiest way to kind of flip that, the more you get your hands on the ball, naturally speaking, yeah, I mean, it's just obvious, like the more you're going to force turnovers. And so this year, again, whether it's camp, and obviously it was very exciting to kind of watch that translate against, you know, Miami's offense and not only against, you know, their own offense, obviously. But it was nice to kind of see that. And I think with Jerry Gray, the one thing, I think Arthur Smith has a very big soft spot for what Jerry Gray has meant for his career. But every time that Arthur talks about Jerry Gray, he just keeps coming back to his leadership and the mindset that he's gotten that whole room to kind of embody. And I think, you know, you mentioned Okuda, you know, all signs. I mean, he looked healthy in camp. He looked quick, athletic. There's very high expectations, I think, that he'll be a legitimate, you know, really good second corner. A.J. Terrell, as you mentioned already, I mean, his camp has been highly, highly impressive. He was really good in Miami as well, you know, earlier throughout all the sessions that he had against, you know, several talented wideouts on Miami's roster. And so I think he, you know, after kind of a slower start last year, kind of looked more like himself as the year progressed, and he's looked every bit of the All-Pro that he was in 2021. So I think that whole room is very, very encouraging. But as you mentioned, they had multiple interceptions on last Friday night with guys that are, again, kind of fighting for roster spots. Like, that is a full-on effort by Jerry Gray. The level that him and Steven Jackson, Ryan Nielsen, all those guys have the whole secondary playing at right now is not a coincidence, in my personal opinion. And, I mean, there's a level of leadership that you see. A.J. Terrell, Jesse Bates. You know, there's guys in that room that have kind of taken on leadership roles, again, at a higher level than what we've seen kind of in years past as far as having high-impact players in those high leadership positions. And I think it's kind of been very productive for that whole room, and you're kind of seeing that translate already just with how aggressive they are. And, again, some of playing the ball is just instinct. And you can see the quickness and the overall mental processing speed that Atlanta has in the secondary right now has been very impressive throughout camp. So, again, I think that what happened in Miami, even though it wasn't the starting group, is just a sign of things to come, really, for Atlanta's whole secondary.
Daniel Flick, Falcons writer for Falcon Report on Fan Nation, joining me here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. You know, I know Arthur Smith talked about Jalen Mayfield and talked about him competing for that swing tackle spot. You know, I thought Mayfield played well. I thought there were a couple of times where he got lost and he got turned around, and when it got into pass coverage, there were some questions. But I do think that if you ask him to go north and south and get his hands on people, that's where his strong suit is. And obviously playing tackle again, you think realistically he nails down a spot? I truly think that if he had not played well and he had played poorly, I think he would have been the next guy cut off this team. But he lives to fight another day. I wonder if he can win that swing tackle spot.
Yeah, I think he absolutely can win it. You know, throughout this week in practice, he's had a few reps at left tackle. And again, that's kind of been the main thing that a lot of people have been looking at as far as who's ahead in that swing tackle race. You know, with Mayfield, I think Arthur Smith surprised a lot of people last week or the week before in camp when he talked about, you know, I believe he was asked about early risers for him, and he mentioned Mayfield. And a lot of people kind of hadn't been paying too much attention to him, and then the more that you kind of watch him throughout camp, they were very pleased with how he came out at right tackle. Obviously, he played right tackle in college. A lot of people kind of felt like that was his more natural position. Obviously, we kind of saw how his year at left guard went as a rookie. But again, with Mayfield, I think he's a guy that they view more, you know, in more of a positive light than some people on the outside do. But I do agree with you that I think as of right now, he's probably on the outside looking in. You know, they signed Josh Myles from Arizona in free agency, and he's largely been the swing tackle so far in camp, kind of holding down that second-team left tackle role. You know, he had a couple rough reps throughout the week in Miami, and so I think that's kind of that kind of opened the door a little bit for a guy like Mayfield. But again, Mayfield also was working third-team right tackle earlier this week as well. So, I mean, he's kind of all over the board. I don't think we're going to get a firm answer on him, Miles, and Vrabel as well, also kind of in that mix as well. And, you know, there's three guys, I think, that are legitimately fighting for that swing tackle spot, but I really think it's going to come down to probably going to come down to Mayfield and Miles is kind of the way it feels like it's shaping up right now. Mayfield, I think, has more work to do. I think Miles entered ahead, and I think even though he hasn't been necessarily stellar, and Mayfield's probably, again, has probably impressed the staff more at various points, I think Mayfield's still kind of fighting a fairly big uphill battle, especially because, you know, his rookie year, again, wasn't stellar, and then he missed all of last year. So, again, there's kind of a level of unknown there. I think he came back and impressed with kind of where he was at. But I still think that, as you mentioned, he's probably more at risk right now than what you would think for a guy that's kind of created as much praise as he has so far early on in camp. And so, again, he'll be a guy to watch. Him and Miles, I think, are going to be very interesting to kind of watch play out, because I really think that competition is kind of an underrated one. I'm very glad you brought it up, because not a lot of people have put a whole lot of attention on it. But I think Mayfield, again, can play right tackle, obviously played inside already in the NFL. I do think that versatility is valuable. But I think as of right now, Josh Myles probably has the advantage there, which probably has Mayfield kind of looking pretty significantly on the outside looking in.
Last question for you. We saw Adi Ogundeji go to the IR, you know, today. I don't know if it's short-term, long-term, but again, when you look at his, when you look at a lot of the metrics and things like that from last year, he did not play well. He was, and again, he was probably used too often, probably played too high of a percentage of snaps, but it wasn't a very good year last year. Now he's hurt. I don't think Adi Ogundeji is going to end up making this club.
Yeah, I would agree. I think where he's at right now feels like we're kind of trending in a similar direction that Atlanta had with a few of the receivers that they've recently had to place on IR as well, where you kind of put them there and then end up waving them a few days later with, you know, Blair and Frank Darby. You know, I think that's probably where Adi is heading right now. Again, you know, very unfortunate result, because obviously, you know, his rookie year, there was quite a lot of potential there. I mean, he was, I don't think he took the step from year one to year two that a lot of people, Atlanta staff included, thought he would take. You know, he arrived kind of with more of a reputation as being a ready-made run stopper with some untapped potential, you know, kind of on third down, and he never really showed he could take that step. And I think he entered this year's training camp, especially with all the acquisitions that they made up front, you know, especially on the edge, that he was probably already kind of right on that fringe. And then, you know, his early performance in camp wasn't anything, you know, overly impressive. And then obviously the injury kind of is probably going to be the last straw for him, if I had to guess. So I would say as of right now, Ogundeji is probably out as things stand today. And, you know, unfortunately, his time in Atlanta may be coming to an end much sooner than I think what a lot of people would have expected, maybe even as recently as this time last year. So, you know, everything kind of changed pretty quick for him there. And, you know, the way that his – I feel like his ceiling right now seems a lot lower than it once did. And, again, you add on the injury, and he's just probably viewed as pretty expendable right now. So that's kind of – I think, like Mayfield, he's honestly, I think Adi's probably in a much worse spot as far as roster odds right now. I think he's in a pretty rough spot.
Atlanta Falcons writer Daniel Flick joined us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Check out his work at Falcon Report on Fan Nation. He's on Twitter, @ByDanielFlick. And Daniel, always appreciate a few minutes with you here. We'll chat again soon.
Absolutely, man. I'll hop back on whenever you want me to.
You got it. When we come back from the top of the hour, it will be the Falcons flyover. We'll hear from Ryan Nielsen, from Zach Harrison, and from Jake Matthews as well. Plus some other news and notes to get into. Chuck, we're hanging out in the Kia Studios. Sports Radio, and that's the game, the Odyssey.com app. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, back at a Chuckery Show, hanging out in the Kia Studios on this Tuesday night with you. 404-726-0929, that is our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. A couple of hours, we will get to rank them. Don't forget, we do it at 940 now, so hit us up with your list. I did have some people that were tweeting me already yesterday, so hit us up at the text line or on my Twitter page, at JMCH316. He's at the D. Lewis for real. Falcons get ready for football coming up on Friday, preseason game number two. We certainly will see the starters, and they'll take on the Cincinnati Bengals. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer. Let's talk to our buddy Daniel Flick. He is a Falcons writer for Falcons Report, a part of Fan Nation, and he's part of the SI Network as well. He's on Twitter at by Daniel Flick. And Daniel, appreciate a few minutes as always as we get ready for preseason game number two coming up here.
Absolutely, man. Happy to hop on with you as always, and excited about, you know, watching Atlanta in action at home this year for the first time on Friday night.
You know, I did think that it was a really good first step. I mean, look, I've explained this to people. You know, would you rather have your backups and third string guys get run over and, you know, play, you know, poorly, or would you rather have your guys that, you know, and there are plenty of guys that they're going to rely on, you know, to be pieces, the D. Alfords and, you know, Arnold Ebikadie and guys like that. I mean, look, there's plenty of expectation for all those guys. But again, I thought it was a good first step all the way around for this team.
Yeah. And, you know, the one thing that a lot of the guys in there have talked about in the last week is that win, even with the starters not out there, you could see an identity forming, and that I think, you know, one of the things that the Falcons have kind of lacked the last several years, like a consummate team identity. And I think this year, again, even though it's not the starters, you can see a certain type of player, a certain type of mindset, for sure a high level of urgency is honestly the word I would use for it. But it was a very, for me, encouraging performance, because I feel like, you know, you mentioned Ebikadie, Alford, you know, very, very clearly that, you know, very, in my eyes, two pretty big winners from, you know, the opener. So I think, you know, playing them in that game, you were hoping that they'd play the way that they did. And so that was obviously encouraging. But even beyond them, there were so many guys in that win that are fighting for roster spots, you know, that ended up playing at a pretty high level. And you could just feel, you know, especially with Ryan Nielsen's unit there, you could just really feel a level of aggression. And again, as you're going to see the talent ramp up on Friday night when they play the starters, I think you're kind of looking to see that same level of overall aggression. Again, I love the word urgency. I think that's really important for this year's team. And I think that's, you know, the way that they've built the team, it's not just a player-by-player deal. It's a mindset that the team has taken on. So even beyond the actual on-field, you know, I would call it a very impressive showing on Friday night of last week. I think it was more a larger picture takeaway that everybody's kind of talked about. Obviously, you know, we've heard all offseason about how strong they feel the culture is there. But I think you really start to gain a greater appreciation for that when you see how deep the roster is with guys who fit that culture. And so I think that's what that was my main takeaway from last Friday night in Miami, and I'm very excited to kind of watch that play out this Friday night as well.
Well, and Daniel, I will say that I have consistently said on this radio show, my podcast, and everywhere I have a platform, that the best acquisition that the Falcons made wasn't a player, wasn't trading for somebody, wasn't Ryan Nielsen. I think the best acquisition they made was bringing Jerry Gray in, who is a longstanding, really good defensive coach. Obviously, you know, if you listen to people like Jair Alexander, he had a big influence on his career. He was there in 2010 when the Seahawks had a couple of rookies named Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas. Those guys turned out pretty well. But the thing is that I think you saw his fingertips all over that secondary. And I know he's not their secondary coach per se, but he's been brought in to do a lot of different things. But the idea of, hey, passes being knocked down, multiple interceptions from this team, there was an aggression out of the secondary that we haven't seen for years, and that's why I'm super excited that when Okuda finally does get healthy and we can see A.J. Terrell and Jesse Bates and Richie Grant and Jalen Hawkins, when we see the guys that are really going to play, and again, D. Alford as well, I think Jerry Gray has already had his fingers all over the pulse of this defense and what this secondary is looking like.
Yeah, and you know, I think, you know, you mentioned how often they got their hands on the ball in Miami. That's a trend that's been happening all training camp, frankly. You know, I mean, that is a trait that secondary has taken on. And again, the Falcons the last several years have not been very good at forcing turnovers, whether that's a pass rush problem, a secondary problem, you know, obviously it's an age-old argument, but no matter how you shape it, they haven't forced turnovers. And I think this year, obviously, that's a big step that they're trying to make. And I think, you know, the easiest way to kind of flip that, the more you get your hands on the ball, naturally speaking, I mean, it's just obvious, like the more you're going to force turnovers. And so this year, again, whether it's camp, and obviously it was very exciting to kind of watch that translate against, you know, Miami's offense and not only against, you know, their own offense, obviously, but it was nice to kind of see that. And I think with Jerry Gray, the one thing, I think Arthur Smith has a very big soft spot for what Jerry Gray has meant for his career. But every time that Arthur talks about Jerry Gray, he just keeps coming back to his leadership and the mindset that he's gotten that whole room to kind of embody. And I think, you know, you mentioned Okuda, you know, all signs. I mean, he looked healthy in camp. He looked quick, athletic. There's very high expectations, I think, that he'll be a legitimate, you know, really good second corner. A.J. Terrell, as you mentioned already, I mean, his camp has been highly, highly impressive. He was really good in Miami as well, you know, earlier throughout all the sessions that he had against, you know, several talented wideouts on Miami's roster. And so I think he, you know, after kind of a slower start last year, kind of looked more like himself as the year progressed, and he's looked every bit of the All-Pro that he was in 2021. So I think that whole room is very, very encouraging. But as you mentioned, they had multiple interceptions on last Friday night with guys that are, again, kind of fighting for roster spots. Like, that is a full-on effort by Jerry Gray. The level that him and Steven Jackson, Ryan Nielsen, all those guys have the whole secondary playing at right now is not a coincidence, in my personal opinion. And, I mean, there's a level of leadership that you see. A.J. Terrell, Jesse Bates. You know, there's guys in that room that have kind of taken on leadership roles, again, at a higher level than what we've seen kind of in years past as far as having high-impact players in those high leadership positions. And I think it's kind of been very productive for that whole room, and you're kind of seeing that translate already just with how aggressive they are. And, again, some of playing the ball is just instinct. And you can see the quickness and the overall mental processing speed that Atlanta has in the secondary right now has been very impressive throughout camp. So, again, I think that what happened in Miami, even though it wasn't the starting group, is just a sign of things to come, really, for Atlanta's whole secondary.
Daniel Flick, Falcons writer for Falcon Report on Fan Nation, joining me here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. You know, I know Arthur Smith talked about Jalen Mayfield and talked about him competing for that swing tackle spot. You know, I thought Mayfield played well. I thought there were a couple of times where he got lost and he got turned around, and when it got into pass coverage, there were some questions. But I do think that if you ask him to go north and south and get his hands on people, that's where his strong suit is. And obviously playing tackle again, you think realistically he nails down a spot? I truly think that if he had not played well and he had played poorly, I think he would have been the next guy cut off this team. But he lives to fight another day. I wonder if he can win that swing tackle spot.
Yeah, I think he absolutely can win it. Throughout this week in practice, he's had a few reps at left tackle. And again, that's kind of been the main thing that a lot of people have been looking at as far as who's ahead in that swing tackle race. With Mayfield, I think Arthur Smith surprised a lot of people last week or the week before in camp when he talked about, I believe he was asked about early risers for him, and he mentioned Mayfield. And a lot of people kind of hadn't been paying too much attention to him, and then the more that you kind of watch him throughout camp, they were very pleased with how he came out at right tackle. Obviously, he played right tackle in college. A lot of people kind of felt like that was his more natural position. Obviously, we kind of saw how his year at left guard went as a rookie. But again, with Mayfield, I think he's a guy that they view more, in more of a positive light than some people on the outside do. But I do agree with you that I think as of right now, he's probably on the outside looking in. They signed Josh Miles from Arizona in free agency, and he's largely been the swing tackle so far in camp, kind of holding down that second-team left tackle role. He had a couple rough reps throughout the week in Miami, and so I think that's kind of opened the door a little bit for a guy like Mayfield. But again, Mayfield also was working third team right tackle earlier this week as well. So I mean, he's kind of all over the board. I don't think we're going to get a firm answer on him, Miles, and Vrabel as well, also kind of in that mix as well. There's three guys I think that are legitimately fighting for that swing tackle spot, but I really think it's going to come down to Mayfield and Miles is kind of the way it feels like it's shaping up right now. Mayfield, I think, has more work to do. I think Miles entered ahead, and I think even though he hasn't been necessarily stellar, and Mayfield's probably, again, has probably impressed the staff more at various points, I think Mayfield's still kind of fighting a fairly big uphill battle, especially because, his rookie year, again, wasn't stellar, and then he missed all of last year. So, again, there's kind of a level of unknown there. I think he came back and impressed with kind of where he was at. But I still think that, as you mentioned, he's probably more at risk right now than what you would think for a guy that's kind of created as much praise as he has so far early on in camp. And so, again, he'll be a guy to watch. Him and Miles, I think, are going to be very interesting to kind of watch play out because I really think that competition's kind of an underrated one. I'm very glad you brought it up because not a lot of people have put a whole lot of attention on it. But I think Mayfield, again, can play right tackle, obviously played inside already in the NFL. I do think that versatility is valuable. But I think as of right now, Josh Miles probably has the advantage there, which probably has Mayfield kind of looking pretty significantly on the outside looking in.
Last question for you. We saw Adi Ogundeji go to the IR today. I don't know if it's short-term, long-term, but, when you look at a lot of the metrics and things like that from last year, he did not play well. He was probably used too often, probably played too high of a percentage of snaps, but it wasn't a very good year last year. Now he's hurt. I don't think Adi Ogundeji is going to end up making this club.
Yeah, I would agree. I think where he's at right now feels like we're kind of trending in a similar direction that Atlanta had with a few of the receivers that they've recently had to place on IR as well, where you kind of put them there and then end up waving them a few days later with Blair and Frank Darby. I think that's probably where Adi is heading right now. Very unfortunate result because obviously, his rookie year, there was quite a lot of potential there. I mean, I don't think he took the step from year one to year two that a lot of people, Atlanta staff included, thought he would take. He arrived kind of with more of a reputation as being a ready-made run stopper with some untapped potential, kind of on third down, and he never really showed he could take that step. And I think he entered this year's training camp, especially with all the acquisitions that they made up front, you know, especially on the edge, that he was probably already kind of right on that fringe. And then, you know, his early performance in camp wasn't anything, you know, overly impressive. And then obviously the injury kind of is probably going to be the last straw for him, if I had to guess. So I would say as of right now, Ogundeji is probably out as things stand today. And, you know, unfortunately his time in Atlanta may be coming to an end much sooner than I think what a lot of people would have expected, maybe even as recently as this time last year. So, you know, everything kind of changed pretty quick for him there. And, you know, the way that his – I feel like his ceiling right now seems a lot lower than it once did. And, again, you add on the injury, and he's just probably viewed as pretty expendable right now. So that's kind of – I think, like Mayfield, he's honestly, I think Ade is probably in a much worse spot as far as roster odds right now. I think he's in a pretty rough spot.
Atlanta Falcons writer Daniel Flick joined us here in the WadeFord.com hotline. Check out his work at Falcon Report on Fan Nation. He's on Twitter, @ByDanielFlick. And Daniel, always appreciate a few minutes with you here. We'll chat again soon.
Absolutely, man. I'll hop back on whenever you want me to.
You got it. When we come back from the top of the hour, it will be the Falcons flyover. We'll hear from Ryan Nielsen, from Zach Harrison, and from Jake Matthews as well. Plus some other news and notes to get into. Chuck, we're hanging out in the Kia Studios. Sports Radio, and that's the game, the Odyssey.com app.